Welcome to 1001 Albums Podcast. Today I'll be discussing Dookie by Green Day with Joel from the Movie Multiverse Podcast.
Rock right. Show I've ever seen was REM. My sister took me when I was 13. They played in this high school gymnasium in Santa Cruz.
Whoa.
So I was like, oh, REM, they're not metal, dude, you know. and I went, and it was like, and the 3 o'clock opened up for them.
Whoa.
And it was like a religious experience, yeah, for me. It's like, you know, they say every 7 years there's certain moments that change your life, yeah, you know. I think that was definitely one of them. You know, I just it wasn't so much the music or the band, but it was just like the whole atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And I just remember watching, like, Peter Buck was like, he was playing this record, and like the monitors or the PA system was really bad or something. So he was like strumming on his guitar really hard, and everybody already walked off stage. And he was just going, just hammering on it. And then finally just takes this Rickenbacker and just swings it in the air and smashes on the ground. And I was like, yeah! That was like the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life, because it was anger. It was straight up aggression, you know. I mean, REM isn't quite the aggressive kind of band, but you know, at that time there, you know, I was impressed. I was 13. So, welcome to 1001 Albums Podcast. Joel, how are you doing, man?
Doing great, James. Thanks for having me, man. I'm excited.
I know. I'm excited to talk to you as well about bands that you actually know lots about, rather than Oasis.
Yeah. I mean, I love Oasis. I do. But that was a challenge. I know that... You know, you've definitely had people who know a lot more about Oasis on your show than me and Casey.
A little bit. a little bit. But you guys, you and Casey really helped me out. So just to clarify for people that don't know, from the Oasis podcast, I'm a massive fan of your and Casey's podcast, which is called The Movie Multiverse, which talks about films and TV and that sort of stuff. And it's a brilliant discussion podcast that I really, really enjoy. And you guys were really helpful in helping me figure out how to podcast, how to literally do it. And yeah. And almost as like a test, I got you guys, who are, you know, Oasis fans, but not necessarily experts,
no,
to podcast about it. So if you want to jump over to the Oasis podcast, you can hear me talking to both Joel and Casey on the very, very early episodes of that. So I'm always, I'll be eternally grateful for you guys for showing me the way.
Well, you're too kind. You did something great with the Oasis podcast. Casey and I are doing our little show, and we keep soldiering on. And you know, it's we can count our biggest supporters on two hands, and you're one of them. And so, you know, we're always going to be so thankful for you, and that you continue to listen, and that you continue to support and care about what our little show and what we do.
It's all good. Well, the thing is, I've got quite a few people I can talk to about Oasis. I haven't got that many people that I can talk to about Star Wars and Marvel and all that other stuff that I love. So, that definitely fills that hole for me where I don't have as many kind of geeky friends over here.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we love doing it. I you know, there's been so many times throughout the years. I mean, we're going on like 6 years now that we've been doing Movie Multiverse, and Yeah, there's definitely times in our lives when life catches up and things get a little hard and we're like, oh, we don't need a podcast on top of all the other things we have to deal with. But like, there's been so many times where me and Casey have just kind of been like, no, you know what? Let's keep going. It's nice. We really enjoy doing this. We're passionate about it. And we just keep it going. You know, we love our little show. We love doing it. And I just love hanging out with Casey, you know, once, you know, for that many hours at a time, you know, because we're just such good friends.
Well, that really comes across. Like, you are, you know, you are very good friends. And and I think the people that listen to it, you know, become part of that community and sort of, you know, and it does feel like you're with friends listening to it, which is the best compliment I can give it, really.
Yeah, well, it's the best compliment I think I can receive about it, because that's lovely to hear. It really is.
All right. Well, look, come on. Let's stop all this.
Okay. Bullshit. All right. No more love fest. Let's get down to business here, James.
That's not very punk. and we're going to talk about some punk now. So one of the things I pinged over to you and, you know, looking at this list, and I fired it over knowing that you're a musician yourself, you've been in sort of hardcore bands and also other bands, like, you know, you've played the is it saxophone,
yeah
you played saxophone in the Moods. It's more like a sort of a soul punk band as well, which is really cool. And so I was very interested to see what choices you put forward, because, you know, Minor Threat are on the list, Bad Brains are on the list, like, you know, there's some real bands that I thought, I bet Joel would go for those. So I was a little bit surprised by your choices. We're gonna start off is it fair to call them pop punk, Green Day?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely pop punk for sure.
Yeah. But is that not an insulting term and do you own that term?
It is what it is. I'm not a fan of pop punk in general, but I cannot say that Green Day wasn't and isn't and never was pop punk, because it is. It's pop punk. It was part of the wave of pop punk of the 90s. And it's really what pop punk is punk that's more accessible to everyone than what not pop punk is. You know, more hardcore, more, you know, more loud, more abrasive, and more, you know, the things that turn most people off to punk are the things that don't exist in pop punk, which is like, you know, a more palpable and digestible melody and, you know, about things like love and, you know, girls and stuff, rather than like, you know, politics and violence and stuff, you know, like it's just that's what makes it pop punk. But I'm not into pop punk in general, but I mean, Green Day absolutely changed my life, like 180 degrees. You know, when I was a kid, when I was very, very young, like 8-9 years old was when I'm first starting to get into music. And it's things like Michael Jackson and, like, you know, Boys to Men and, like, you know, that kind of stuff. But then Dookie comes around and I was just the right age. I was like 10, 11 years old, and I'm starting to, like, know things about myself as a human rather than just being like a dumb kid, you know? Mm-hmm. And that spoke to me on such a level that I was like, well, maybe this is me. Maybe this is who I am. And that started me on this entire journey of punk rock and, you know, being in bands and stuff like that. And the thing I still pursue ravenously to this day of playing music and being into punk rock music and the ethos of punk rock, it all started with Green Day. So Dookie was... And as it is, like, this is not a unique story. A lot of people have this story about coming to punk rock through Dookie in 1984 or 1994. It was so important to that time and for a lot of people to kind of change where they were going, you know.
No, oh, that's cool. And do you remember the first time you heard a Green Day tune?
Yes, I do. And it's actually kind of lame, but my mom actually purchased this CD.
And that was the first time I heard it. That is bad parenting.
Yeah, I know. She's
using the language on this track, on this album.
When I Come Around was on the radio, and she liked that song, and she bought the CD. No time to search the world. My mom would just buy CDs for like one song. She's not particularly a lover of music, but she would like a song and she'd buy a CD, and she actually bought this CD. I don't know why, but you know, some neighborhood kids. I remember I was still living in Florida. I moved from Florida. That's where I was born, in Florida, and I moved to New Mexico in 1995. So it was 1 year after Dookie came out. And I remember being in Florida shortly before I left, and some neighborhood kids were talking about Dookie. They were saying like, oh, you know, they say like fuck so many times. Are we good to curse on this?
Of course.
Okay. This is such a weird memory, but I remember talking to some neighbor kids and just like talking about how much profanity was on Dookie. Mm. And it was like so scandalous, you know? And I was like, that CD's at my house. Like, I know that CD. And I remember like kind of squirreling it away to my room and putting it on my little boom box. I took my Boyz II Men CD out and I put the Green Day CD in and I started listening to it. And I was just like, oh my God, what is that? And it was really bizarre to me. You know, it was so changing. It changed everything. And then when I moved to New Mexico, that was like the most recent thing that I had gotten into. And there was another kid in my like fifth grade class that was like, oh yeah, I like Green Day. And just me trying to make a friend, it was like, oh yeah, I like Green Day too.
Yeah.
And then we formed a relationship out of that. And he ended up being the person I started my very first punk band with. So cool. It just goes from there. But like, you know, that's just my personal story. But like the themes in Dookie were so palpable to like, you know, disenfranchised kids, you know, like it's so like every song, you know, knowing what I do about Green Day now and having become such a massive fan after Dookie and going back through their catalog, it was like pre-Dookie, it was all like songs about girls, you know, it was all songs about breaking up and, you know, really being in love with a girl in your class or whatever, you know? And it's like, that's something that everybody can identify with. Sure. But like with Dookie, it really was a sea change and a theme change for them to be about like apathy and like being being a disenchanted, you know, teenager who thinks everything is bullshit. And and that is, you know, that, you know, the '90s were kind of like the jaded era, you know, like that's the jaded era of music. You got your Nirvanas and your Green Days and stuff. And that was like, it was huge in that time. And so that was what, like, I really latched onto. And it's still, even though, like, it's sadly Green Day has turned into, I don't even know anymore what they're doing currently, but like, it still meant so much to me when I was growing up. And like those, that ethos, like that message is still something I care about so much today. Like, I remember when I was a kid and I saw an interview with Billy Joe on MTV and he was talking about filming their very first music video for Longview. And they had all these like suits and execs and like producers and directors and stuff all bearing down on them. Because they were the next big thing and they were trying to put makeup on his face and cover up his acne and they were telling him to fix his crooked tooth and stuff. And he's just like, fuck you. No, don't put makeup on my face. I have zits. I don't care. I don't care if I have a crooked tooth, you know. And it's all that really like kind of utilitarian like feeling about like, you know, not really caring about that stuff was so like, I still feel that way. I think that was totally instilled in me. I thought that was so cool when I saw that the first time, you know? So, yeah. It's a big thing. We'll be right to us wasting your time. No application, just wasting your time. So why are you alone wasting your time?
No, I definitely remember. I think I don't know if definite when I would have heard it for the first time. Probably would have been Basket Case on MTV. Yeah. I think that probably would have been it. That was a big hit over here.
That video, I don't think, is so when amazing.
I Come Around was. I don't think Welcome to Paradise was. The okay. big hit was Basket Case. Yeah. And most people here, I mean, now American Idiot is probably the Green Day song that people know, especially yeah. the later generation. But it was Basket Case was the big one. We were only just getting MTV here. Right, yeah, so 90s, if you think okay. MTV, I know you guys had had MTV since the early 80s, but over here we only got Sky, which was like satellite TV, in like late 80s, early 90s. And yeah, I didn't have satellite TV until maybe 94, well, 95, 96. So it comes out 94, so maybe it was at my house. But yeah, and just being really excited, like the vibrant colours of that video in yes. the... in the asylum and stuff, and it was just yeah. you know, and I loved Billy Joe's kind of like that vacant expression and sort of jerky right. head and looking off to the yes. side and stuff. I just thought, oh, this guy's cool, man.
That was
and
everything.
I did really like that band, and then it was just at that point where, for me, having sort of similar to you, like been into lots of different types of pop music, in 1994 I started like listening to lots and lots of different types of music, but just in a okay, like there's a lot of interesting stuff going on here, you know, and like one of my mates was really into Guns N' Roses, one of my mates was really into Metallica, one of my, you know, and sort of like just like, okay, just stepping into different worlds. Mm. But yeah, that the world of Green Day, and I did get the Dookie CD, and it was like an illicit substance. This is like...
Yes.
There's a song, you know, the fact that it goes, when masturbation's lost its fun, you're like... Yeah. What? Like, it was just so naughty, you know? It really was. Like it was like having contraband.
Yes, I did the exact same thing. You know, I did the exact same thing. I had a short period of time where I couldn't get CDs. I couldn't buy CDs that had the explicit parental advisory sticker on them. Yeah. There was, you know, a couple of years there that my parents were, you know, not wanting me to get that stuff. And like, you know, there's some songs on Dookie that are safe to listen to.
Yeah.
And there's some songs on Dookie that you have to squirrel away and like listen to quietly in your room and have it totally infect your worldview, you know, without your parents knowing it or something, you know. But yeah, like that song Longview, that was their first single on the yeah. album, and the song's about masturbation. Like that is so punk rock, you yeah. know. Like that's yeah. so cool, you know. Like I know that it's pop punk, and I know that it was like more like accessible and stuff like that, and like a lot of like their punk pedigree they lost signing over to a major label, and you know, it was this whole thing of them being sellouts and whatever, but like they never lost their punk attitudes. And I think that came through in Dookie so much, because like how fucking punk rock is it to have your first single be the song about masturbation? Like,
yeah,
that's incredible. You know,
yeah.
and that was not, you know, that was a big risk that they came right out the gate with, and they were totally uncompromising. Like all the stories you read about, you know, them being molded, you know, the suits at Warner trying to mold them and like kind of bend them to their will. They were absolutely uncompromising and completely unflexible. They had what they were going to do. And it's like, hey, you want us? This is what we are. If you don't want us, fine, whatever. We'll go back to the clubs in the East Bay. You know, we'll go back to California and play at Gilman Street. You know, it doesn't matter. So they were uncompromising in their, and I think Dookie is even way more punk than anything they did prior when they were underground, and on an independent label. Dookie is, I think, by far, if maybe Insomniac Dookie and Insomniac, I think, are their two punkest albums of their whole, right. you know, thing. They're dark. It's about drugs. It's about, you know, like not caring about anything, you know, things like that. You know, it's tough, you know, it's dark. You know, the themes are dark. It's an amazing album. It really is. Mm. And musically, it's really complex, too. I don't know how familiar you are with, like, some of the, like, deeper tracks on the album, but, like, song Chump, track 3, comes to mind. And there is, you know, just these minutes-long musical interludes of just, like, Billy Joe doing these really kind of, like, interesting guitar riffs with, you know, Trey Cool being the drummer that he is as well. You know, none of them are slouches. You know, when you think about the Longview bass line as well, like, that's a bass player. That's not just some... idiot playing root notes. Like, he's that's a bass player. Mike Dern is a dyed-in-the-wool bass player. And so they're just, like, they're great musically, you know, they're great musicians as well, you know, and that really comes through in the songwriting as well, that, like, there's some musical... like musically complex things in there as well.
I'm just going to pick up on that because it is simple, and Green Day get picked up for just doing that very simple sort of, you know, like the simple sort of bar chords, yeah, you know, up and down these sort of often these three chord songs. Yeah. But actually, you're right in that there are these moments of, you know, whether it is the Longview bass line, you know, there are these interesting moments about it, and they are all. Within, it's almost like blues, I suppose, isn't it? That you've got this sort of pretty basic structure of these 3-minute punk songs, but actually what they are doing around them and the little flourishes is interesting. But beyond that as well, I mean, my favorite one on the album was always the tune Pulling Teeth.
Oh, that song
is love
so
that
good.
Tune. And that's just so interesting as well, because, you know, it's a relationship song, but it's like a really dark, weird kind of relationship song, isn't it? Yeah. Like, you know,
all the imagery
abuse.
Of like, all the imagery of violence and bleeding and broken bones and nasty cuts and stuff like that. Like, it's dark, like you said. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but it's a man singing it about a woman who's abusing him, which is just a, you know, I've always thought that was interesting. That one. I'm all busted.
And She really stands out for me as well. Like, I think was, I don't think She was a single, but I remember that was a really big tune here for people that had the album.
Even all of the people I've known in my life that are too punk rock for Green Day, they still will concede that She is an amazing punk song. Almost everyone thinks that She is probably one of their best songs.
I completely agree. Yeah. So where do you see this then, Joel, in like the in terms of where it was inspired by? There's the brilliant line in High Fidelity. He plays Stiff Little Fingers, and who is it? It's like the geeky. There's Jack Black's character, and there's the geeky guy, and he says like, "This is one of the biggest inspirations on Green Day." The other one being, and she's like, "The Clash." He's like, "Very good." And he puts Stiff Little Fingers on, and then someone comes through and says, "Oh, is this a new Green Day?" And they have that like shared. They look at each other moment, like, "Yeah." These people, they don't know.
Well, the interesting thing about Green Day is that so much of their music is, in truth, directly influenced by, in my opinion, two bands:
The Clash.
Clash. But also by this band called the Stiff Little Fingers. I think you would really love this band.
that sounds great. My name's Anna.
My name's Dick.
Is this the new Green Day?
Would you say that's fair? Did Hyper Dirty get it right? Are we talking Stiff Little Fingers in the Clash?
Sure, absolutely. But I just happen to know that, like, Billy Joe grew up on Elvis, and, like, he's a massive Elvis Presley fan, and also things like Black Sabbath. You know, the very first time that him and Mike Dirnt got together to play music together, they were, like, in, you know, high school. They were, like, 13, 14 years old, and they were playing, like, Black Sabbath tunes together. So, I mean, that's where the, kind of, like, the heaviness and the darkness comes in, but, like, you know, the first bands to make punk rock melodic were not the pop punk bands of the 90s. You know, it was obviously you had the Ramones. I think they're very heavily influenced by the Ramones, and also just the East Bay punk scene, you know, where they cut their teeth. That's where all of this punk rock sound was evolving to, is what is kind of really exemplified in Green Day. Because for me, like, especially being in the punk rock scene, you're inspired by the things that are happening around you, you know, in the contemporary moment, you know, like, it's other bands around you that are shaping what you're playing. Because especially, like, you know, talking to you about doing this podcast, you thought I was only just going to pick Bad Brains and Minor Threat because I play punk rock music. But, like, punk rock, me playing punk rock really is more about me having had a home in that music scene and just playing that music because I loved a punk show and I loved being a part of punk shows and I wanted to play punk shows. But, like, I'm a fan of all kinds of music, you know, and it's not just punk that I love, you know. But, like, I think that Green Day was inspired by the scene that they came from in the late 80s in the East Bay, because, you know, punk on the West Coast started in the early 80s, in Los Angeles, down in Southern California, and it was very violent, and it was almost like, you know, there were gangs, like, it was like punk gangs, like, you know, you had bands like Suicidal Tendencies that were, like, legendary LA bands their fans were even thought of as, like, a gang by, like, law enforcement and stuff, and it was all about violence and kicking the shit out of that guy, and, you know, and they were always, you know, fucking each other up and killing each other and stabbing each other and stuff. And, like, all the, like, artsy tender kids went up north to the Bay, and they were writing more songs about inclusion. You have, like, songs, you have bands that were on Lookout Records, which was the label that Green Day started on, which is an East Bay label. And you have bands like Pansy Division, which was, like, one of the first openly gay punk rock bands. You know, they had like gay, you know, they were gay men in a punk rock band, and they, you know, all of that stuff. And it was more about, you know, it was more melodic. It was more about, like, being more tolerant, and it was more about, you know, that kind of stuff. And so there was a lot of bands like One Man Army and like 15 and Crimpshine and stuff that were bands from the Bay Area, and Rancid. I'm sure you've heard of Rancid.
Yeah.
You know, those were bands. Yeah, those were bands that were absolutely inspiring Green Day in the moment, because those were the shows that those kids were going to when they were young and they were impressionable. Those were the shows that they were attending, and that was what was shaping them. But, like, I know as far as, like, music goes, they just loved Elvis and Black Sabbath and stuff before they started going to shows. You know, punk rock really is in the moment shaping you by the shows that you're just fortunate enough to be there for. And so I think those are absolutely the biggest influences. And then you go back to things like the Ramones, which I think as far as, like, musically is one of the biggest, Green Day, you know, inspiring that sound of punk is, like, the most melodic, you know, forms of early punk, which I think is the Ramones. They started that for sure.
We're Green Day. We're going to play Ramones songs.
Let I got no
about going forward, do you think, what sort of influence do you think they've had on kind of on modern music and pop punk since Dookie?
I think literally every pop punk band that has existed after Dookie is inspired by Dookie. Everyone. Mm-hmm. Every single one. I mean, it's like they are the Beatles of pop punk. You know, like there's bands like, you know, and they're not all bands that I care for, but like bands like My Chemical Romance, like, you know, bands that got so huge, Blink 182, stuff like that. Those bands worship at the altar of Green Day.
Yeah. Good Charlotte, Sum 41.
Yeah. They all just absolutely worship Green Day. You know, Green Day started it all for all of them, because Nirvana was the first mainstream grunge band and Green Day was the first absolutely mainstream punk band. And, they started it. You know, I know that Green Day wasn't the first punk band signed to a major label. That's definitely not true, but like they were the ones that did it most effectively. They are the ones that reached the most people and had the biggest success while still trying to stay as punk as possible. It was important to them to stay punk. It was important to them to not forget where they came from. You know, and there were other bands like, you know, The Offspring, and, you know, but then they went off and did Pretty Fly for a White Guy. And like, what is that? That's not punk. Like, what are you doing? That's like, that's so weird. Right. Like, but Green Day tried to stay true. You know, they really did. And I know there's a lot of punks out there that are like, Green Day's not punk. They were never punk. Screw that. But like, I think that they are. I think that they are. Whether they're, however melodic their music ever got, I think like you said, Pulling Teeth. That song is so mellow, and it's so beautiful, and it's so melodic and so cool. It almost like doesn't resemble any punk song in any way sonically, but the attitude of it is punk as fuck.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know.
Absolutely. No. Well, that's been brilliant. And so we'll finish off by just asking, do you think Dookie deserves to be on the 1001 list? And having a look at the list, it's only Dookie and American Idiot that make the list. Do you think there's other Green Day albums that you think deserve to be on the list as well as or instead of Dookie and American Idiot?
No, because we're really talking about influence. We're talking about impact. You know, and Dookie and American Idiot are easily their two most impactful albums as far as like the way that they made the world feel and the way that they were able to communicate what they wanted to say and how effective they were in doing that. Like I said, I love my era of Green Day. Green Day died for me with American Idiot. I think it's a wonderful album and I think it's great, but like they became for somebody else after that.
Right.
Like, I would love to selfishly keep Green Day to myself in my old age and have them be playing little clubs and be sound exactly like they did in the Dookie era and just be for me and other people that are as old as me that still love them from their heyday, you know?
Mm.
But they have become relevant to a whole new generation. And I commend them for that, you know. I'm happy for them. Because there is still a legion of 16-year-olds out there that absolutely worship Green Day. And that's crazy, right? Mm. Like, those guys are in their 50s. And they've got 16-year-olds who are obsessed with them because of what they're doing now. And it's speaking to them now. And that's what Green Day has always done. And I think that that's great, but it's just not for me. Like, the music is not for my demographic. I'm not the audience, and that's okay. Mm. But, like, American Idiot was a great album, but it changed them. And it became, you know, it became for the bigger chunk of people that it appealed to at that time. Sure. You know, it was a great commentary on, you know, the Bush era of politics, and it was more political than they've ever been. And I think that that's great that they were able to get into that, you know, that headspace and create such an effective statement. But for me, it's that middle chunk of Green Day albums that I love so much. Dookie, Insomniac, Nimrod, Warning.
Sure.
You know, Dookie was absolutely they did it best on Dookie. And then, you know, my personal favorite is Nimrod. I love Nimrod, but it wasn't as impactful as Dookie. And then obviously American Idiot as well launched them a whole new career. It was like a whole new lifetime for Green Day started with American Idiot, a whole new lifetime of their career. So
And they got a Broadway play out of it, right?
Yeah, they got lots of stuff. Yeah, and it's a Broadway play that's still a thing that is being performed, I think.
it's crazy.
And that is
crazy. I think
crazy.
It's in the West End as well.
Yeah, it is absolutely crazy.
This spring, Broadway's ready to rock.
Don't want to be an American idiot.
Green Day's American Idiot.
Don't want a nation under the new media.
The album of the decade comes to Broadway. And now through February 12th, American Express card members have exclusive access to tickets. American Idiot, only with your American Express card. Visit telecharge.com today.
Because they were circling the toilet bowl before American Idiot. Their careers were, you know, as a band. Like, I loved Warning. Warning came out on my birthday, and I was so excited, and I thought it was a great album, but, like, really not many people cared. It was, right. like, almost nothing. Like, most of the people that I grew up with that liked Green Day were done by that time, and they didn't care anymore, and I was still carrying the torch for them. And then they took a really long break. It was, like, 5 years before right. American Idiot came out, and they had, like, this long hiatus of, like, are we even a band anymore? And then they went and they said, you know what, let's give it a big good push again and make this record that we feel passionate about. And American Idiot just exploded, and they just were back suddenly, and it was back in a humongous way, and they're still riding that momentum even now. Sure. And that's crazy. Like, that was American Idiot was now 16, what did it come out in, 2004 or something? Like, that was a long time ago. That was like 16 years ago, and they're still riding that shit. So that's crazy. Good for them.
And yeah. Dookie would be what, 94? So that is 26 years.
26 years.
Ago. Quarter of a century, man. That is crazy.
Yeah, absolutely crazy.
But let's rate it then. So I don't know if you'll balk at this. I don't know if this goes against your punk rock attitude. But out of 10. I would give Dookie, because I think it's great and I really enjoy it. I haven't, it's not an album I've gone back to over and over again over the years. And I think it was just perfect as a 14-year-old. It was perfect for me, with the songs about, you know, not giving a fuck about anything and the sort of masturbation and all this sort of stuff. Right. I think it was brilliant at the time. And having gone back to it, I think it is still a very special album. It's not just like a, you know, like a pop punk album that doesn't stand the test of time. I really think it does, but I don't think it's quite in the upper echelons of like Beatles and, you know, the real amazing stuff. So I'm going to go 8.2.
Sure. I'm right there with you. I think that that's a very fair rating for Green Day, because it is what it is. It is a pop punk album from the 90s. I mean, it shaped my entire life. I wouldn't be who I am today, but in the big picture of music, you know, like I said, I'm a music fan more than just a punk rock person. I'm not going to give it a 10 out of 10 when there's, you know, the White Album out there, you know.
What's that? I've never heard that one.
You never heard of that one?
Is that good?
Yeah. Or, you know,
so go on. What are you going out of 10 then?
You know, I think 8 is right there. You know, it's, I think it meant a lot, and it had a big impact, and it was a really important record, and it was important for music going forward, I think. But yeah, I mean, I've moved on, you know, like it's not something I listen to every day either, you know? And, but it is important. And I think 8 out of 10 is very fair and very good. I'm with you.
Cool. Yeah. Well, Joel, thank you very much for your time on 1001 Albums.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. That was really fun.
Sometimes I give myself the creeps. Sometimes my mind plays tricks on me. It all keeps adding up. I think I'm cracking up. Am I just paranoid? Am I just stuck?
I went to your house. All by myself. You and me had such wonderful times. When am all by myself. All by myself.